Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. The calamitous oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico has been world news for weeks now. And you may have wondered, could it happen here? And if it did, what will we do about it? Well, Nick Quinn, Group Manager of the Marine Pollution Response Service, has some idea. He's just back from helping with the Gulf cleanup. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you.
Now, what work were you doing in the Gulf? What did your day consist of?
Day was pretty long. We were working about 16-hour days, 7 days a week within one of the command centres. And I guess for an appreciation sense, in the command centre there are 500 to 600 people. And it's set a little bit back from the beaches and from the near shore or the offshore sort of responses mounted in the US.
Have you ever worked on anything of approaching this sort of scale before?
No, I haven't, and neither have a lot of other people, which is quite comforting. We're seeing between 4,000 and 10,000 cubic metres of oil being released from that particular wellhead in a day.
You say you're working 16-hour days, 7 days a week. What was the mood like?
The mood in the camp was really one of let's get the job done and let's put all our efforts into it. So everyone who was involved certainly gave their best into whatever area or field of endeavour they were involved in. But certainly it had become more or less an oil spill with an organisation backing it and helping the clean-up efforts.
It must have been. Was it incredibly frustrating knowing that you'd be working these long hours, these long days, and still the majority of the oils are still staying in the water there?
The majority of the oil is staying in the water, but we're seeing the on-water interventions actually being quite successful, on-water or in-water interventions being quite successful, and that's a key learning for Maritime New Zealand. And certainly if we have any spills back in New Zealand, we can bring some of those lessons back from the Gulf of Mexico.
What was the big lesson? What did you really learn worked?
I think two sides of creating a big team really early on in the response. So gathering as many resources and people around you as you could, and then applying those resources and people to probably the best endeavours that you could make to respond to this sort of oil spill.
What is the environment here? We do actually have reasonably detailed regulations on this, don't we?
The environment here, Maritime New Zealand heads up oil spill response in New Zealand. We've got very close relationships and partnerships with regional councils who really are key and fundamental to how we initially respond and attack an oil spill. If it gets bigger than the regional councils and their resources, it comes to Maritime New Zealand. Of course, we've always got the spiller in the background as well, and this is where I think the spiller in the Gulf of Mexico is actually responding to their own spill, whereas in New Zealand, it comes down to Maritime New Zealand and really whatever resources we can call in to assist us.
Are the factors there that we would ever see a spill in this magnitude in New Zealand? I mean, do we have the same size of wells, the same size of reserves, that sort of thing?
I think we've got to appreciate that in the Gulf of Mexico, there are thousands of wells offshore. In New Zealand, I think we've got 7 wells off the Taranaki coastline. So size and number of wells is pretty important to begin with. Second important side is that Maritime New Zealand has quite a close monitoring and regulatory role with the offshore industry. And through that, we begin to appreciate and realise, I think, the capacity and capability of the offshore industry.
I was talking to recently to someone from the offshore drilling industry who said, look, none of the scenarios allow for this, for an event like this, that we've planned for how we deal with something a fraction of the size. And if it happened again and it happened here, we'd be in exactly the same position. Is that fair call?
It is, and it's pretty typical of many spill responses. You can't template a spill response. In one sense, it may be a ship running aground and losing a whole lot of her bunker oils. In another sense, it may be an unsourced spill that comes from offshore. So it's responding to what the incident actually is. An interesting comment from your observer, because a lot of the people in the US are along the same lines. This is the first time they've ever come to a spill of this sort of magnitude, and a spill where the source keeps pumping out oil. So that's quite unusual, and certainly unusual in terms of the Exxon Valdez, which it's been compared to.
How rare is it to have that situation? Because the Exxon Valdez was, you know, that was a ship that broke up. How rare is it to have a situation like this where oil is gushing out of the seabed at the rate it is? Does it happen very often?
The occurrence of these sorts of oil spills, an interesting question. We responded to the Montara oil spill, or assisted the Australian Maritime Safety Authority in their response to the Montara oil spill off the West Australian coastline last year. So in terms of how often does it occur to this degree, I think we can all be the judge of that. But we have responded, I think, in assisting the Australians as early as 12 months ago.
I mean, you'd have to say that if something of this magnitude, God forbid, did happen to New Zealand, we probably wouldn't get the same response, international response. Would you expect that that they've had in the Gulf of Mexico? Would you imagine, you know, the Americans and everyone coming down to help us out?
I think we're at day 75 now of this spill in the US, and the US is still gathering resources and still gathering a whole lot of people and equipment in place. So 2.5 months down track, we're still seeing the collection and gathering of resources to apply to the spill. So in a sense, I think the spill continues, and while it continues, then resources continue to be gathered. Could we get it in New Zealand or gather these in New Zealand? I think we could, but we'd certainly need the infrastructure to support 40,000 responders, which is what the US currently has.
40,000 people, that's extraordinary, isn't it?
That's size of a half-decent city in New Zealand, isn't it?
Mind you, where I was working was three states, and within the three states we had 22,000 people, and I think they were employing about 3,500 vessels to assist with the on-water operations. So there were three states involved, and each state is reasonably sizable in terms of its relation to the New Zealand landmass. But yeah, it would be more the infrastructure behind us supporting a massive response effort as we've seen in the US.
What do you think is going to be the long-term impact, assuming that at some point the gusher can be capped, and what are the long-term impacts of something like this happening?
I think the long-term impacts of an oil spill are pretty emotional for a large number of people. While there are environmental impacts as well, there's certainly the emotional effect left on a lot of the small business owners, the homeowners, the holiday homeowners. And it's the fact that offshore in the Gulf of Mexico, there are so many oil rigs and wells that are in place. Could this happen to them again? And I guess it's that that thought in the back of your mind, is your property price going to devalue? Is your business going to devalue? In fact, is your whole lifestyle going to devalue? So I'd probably base the long-term impacts on a bit of an emotional level.
Did you see firsthand some of the pictures that we've been seeing from the press, you know, the birds covered in oil, the dead turtles and so forth?
Yes, I have seen the pictures. The interesting, I've only seen the pictures, but the interesting comment I'd make is a lot of the in-water or on-water response efforts being made are actually stopping a lot of the oil coming ashore and washing ashore. And so we're seeing relatively low impact on wildlife. And in fact, we're seeing relatively low impact at sea on species such as fish. We're not seeing a mass of fish dying. So I think around the 120, 130 mortality rate on wildlife is the sorts of figures that we're looking at.
Well, let's hope it never does happen here. Nick Quinn, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you both.
Nick Quinn of the Marine Pollution Response Service. After the break, women's rugby in the Iran and Flip Grater at war when she's awake.